bitch and sing along. Yeah. Rapping so boring, now correct me if I'm wrong. Yeah. It's like they took the art form. I'm tired of the same rap songs.
Good evening, this is Sean P.
I'm Big Root.
And we are the brothers.
Coming to you live from the Boogie Down Bronx.
Yep, and bringing you another episode. Today's topic and title is the space race. And that's for a lot of obvious reasons. Space has been in the news very much recently, maybe consistently throughout the last half of the last century, but certainly there's been an uptick in interest in space over the last month or so. So, Big Roop, what is your initial take or just your familiarity with the space race? Because there was a time when that was the biggest thing in the world, and then it seemed to disappear for a while.
I mean, as far as I know, as far as the space race goes, is basically it's privatized now, where a lot of private entities, private companies are trying to go into space. Whereas in the past, it was totally a national thing where NASA was the one that was putting all of those space shuttles and rocket ships and satellites in space. Now it's private entities that are trying to, you know, get to space and to explore.
Right, right. So what do you think the significance of that? Just going back to the beginning of the space race. I mean, who was the space race, for our listeners, who was the original space race between? Right, race suggested there's at least two parties competing against each other trying to win. So what was the original space race?
It was the United States versus Russia against the USSR. And basically, they were trying to say whoever got to the moon first can claim it as their property.
Right. Funny enough, I didn't know that last little detail. That's interesting. But this is mine. So who got to space first? That's a funny thing you said. You said who got to the moon first. Who got to space first?
If I remember right, the Russian cosmonauts got to space first. Because we were having technical issues and several setbacks with different missions. I don't know them by name. I just know that we had some difficulties. And I think Russia was the first one to put somebody into orbit. But we were the ones that got to the moon first.
Right. My understanding is just that, too. I don't even know if we had any missions prior to them doing the orbit. I don't know if that was actually the event that pushed us further as far as having to get it done, or if somehow they leapfrogged us and got to orbit. I think they were ahead of us and got to orbit first because they were ahead of us. And then that was like the drive for us to hurry up and catch up and pass them. Again, I'm not sure that either. So maybe we were at one point they passed us. That I don't know.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I think we were behind and Kennedy got into office and that was the big push of we have to get a man on the moon.
Exactly. And it's funny you said it because Kennedy, the 1960 election, the new administration, it brought in this new energy, right? And one of Kennedy's characteristics, President Kennedy, was a can-do attitude. And like you say, you know, NASA and the race to the moon, it became a national obsession. It became a national sense of pride. And it's just so funny how that changed it, right? The Russians got to space first. That couldn't stand. So suddenly you had the nation mobilized, as you said. It was a national government effort, not a private commercialized one. And within 10 years, we had somebody on the moon.
Yeah, and it was a national thing where it wasn't just a certain segment. It's basically every American wanted to see us make it to space and make it to the moon first. So you would have everyone, I know I was a kid, you would go and sit by the TV and when they'd have the mission, you want to see what's going on. And I remember when they did walk on the moon. I actually remember the first time they walked on the moon, but I think the subsequent missions when I was a little bit older, I remember watching it on TV and, you know, wearing a spacesuit and everything else.
Exactly. And well, you should. I mean, it's funny that as turbulent as the 60s were, there were some unifying factors. And that was the biggest one. That was the one that connected in some ways all the humanity. Certainly it connected the good majority of Americans. It was something we all felt proud of and felt a part of. Right. So like you said, the original space race between these two global superpowers was a national sense of pride, and ultimately it was a national victory. And then what happened?
Well, we had more and more missions and developed new machines. Eventually, we had the space shuttle, which was supposed to make space travel similar to taking an airplane. It was never that simple. Still took a lot of fuel, and you could lose some or whatever, but it was post trying to make it more of a regular thing.
Right. So basically what happened, I'll kind of give my criticism in a little bit, because this is something I've used many years to critique, not just NASA, but just generational technology. And we've done previous episodes where I'm usually harder on future generations because they like to get the rewards and results without doing the work of previous generations. So basically, the space shuttle represented was a reusable rocket. So it wasn't like an airplane. It wasn't going to be that simplified. But before that, rockets went to space and they were only used one time. The capsule would come down. There'd be a parachute and that was it. And then they'd have to use a whole new rocket. So the space shuttle that came with a design where the rocket was reusable. And I think because of that, this goes to the point I was making, we got complacent, right? We got to the moon. No big deal anymore. Of course it's a big deal. But it got to the point where it didn't seem like a big deal anymore. And like you said, it's like an airplane. It goes up, it comes down, we land. So I think in a lot of people's minds, as far as the general public, conquering space was already done. And I think to the point of the astronauts and to NASA as a whole, it also became complacent in a way that they weren't pushing themselves with new ideas and new strategies. They were just kind of doing what already had been done and just keep doing it and doing it and doing it and not really thinking towards the future, just kind of thinking one day at a time, just do my job.
What's going on, man? I don't understand it. I want something good to listen to. I demand it. All the real artists on another planet. And me, I'm the last MC still standing.
And I think that's where the complacency set in, or that was the complacency setting in. And that's what happened to space race. There was no more race. Nobody was running. People were still sometimes going to space, but it wasn't this run. It wasn't this race. It wasn't this, like you said, this national pride, this sense of urgency.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I mean, I think we became so complacent that when we had the Challenger incident in 86, it was shocking because I remember they had the space of that mission that morning. And I'm thinking, none of it. It's just routine. Oh, yeah, they're going up. Oh, I'll see where they're going. Let's see, blah, blah, blah. And then when the rocket blew up, it's like, what? Okay, this is not expected. That's why it was so shocking. It had become routine like an airplane.
Right. And again, that's part of the conversation because, you know, if you follow the Apollo missions, there'd been other accidents in previous times. There'd been other astronauts who died. But again, the space shuttle looked like an airplane. And for the most part, people think airplanes never crash. We know that's not true either, but they generally don't. So like you said, there was this general sense that it's not a big deal, even though it was a big deal. Let's not say that because, like you said, you went to watch it. So it was still a sense of pride. It was always broadcast on TV, and lots of people, regardless of where they were at work, in school, it was still something to watch. It wasn't the same as the 60s, but it still was a national event.
Yeah, I remember in school, they used to bring in the TV. You know, they didn't bring the TV in too often.
Right. So I'm saying it did have some elements of what it was, but it wasn't what it was in the 60s. It wasn't this unifying, singular task that the whole country was tapped into.
Yeah, I mean, if somebody wanted to really equate it to something, and not to get into too much into sports, it's kind of like after we had the Dream Team, now we expect the basketball team to always win. It's not a big deal when they go to the Olympics. It's a big deal if they lose, but it's not really a big deal anymore.
That's a good point. That's a good point. And there are some similarities there because you can look at the Dream Team as being the best engineered parts that the United States manufactured and could put together for the race, right? It was a dream team. And again, I think, you know, going back to Kennedy's original challenge, right? It was us assembling all the best parts and pieces we could to go to space. So that's a good analogy. And once we did it using the dream team analogy, we just figured we'd win every other Olympic game by 40 points, right? Forget about being challenged. We just figured we're going to win every game by 40 points. And for obvious reasons, that's not the case. So I agree, that was a pretty good analogy.
Okay, okay.
Okay.
But it's really, you know, the last frontier. We figured that we've been every place on Earth, pretty much. So now, I guess, you know, individual people or companies are now trying to explore, and they want to go to space and see what it's all about. So we'll see if this is the, like you said, the new frontier of where we're going to be going.
Right. Well, just to get to that, because, I mean, that's the point, right? Because those are two very different things. Like, in other words, how did we, well, from my perspective, how do we go from this national urgency of the country having to get to space to us almost forgetting that we went there, right? Obviously, you had the conspiracy theorists who said we never went there, whatever. But the point being, we achieved this great challenge, like I said, and if this was the last frontier, you would have thought we would have continuously built on it, right? Obviously, there were other factors on Earth, in our country, that made it more difficult. It got expensive to travel to space. We had other situations in the 70s. We had inflation. Obviously, there's been wars. So there's other distractions that took away from it. But aside from that, it just seems we lost our wonder of space.
Yeah, I mean, I think once people saw that we could get to the moon and we can go to space and go into orbit, I think a lot of people were like, well, we have other problems to solve on Earth than trying to go and worry about outer space when we have all these other problems down here.
True. And I think it goes back again to that word complacency, right? Something that might be a big challenge one minute or one day seems like it's nothing the next, right? Because you just have done it before. So I think complacency set in. So what happened then at the point of NASA, because again, I tend to keep my pulse on what's going on in the world. I want to say in the late 2000s, certainly before, yeah, no, it was in the mid 2000s. I forget exactly when, but NASA said that they were going to have to put the space shuttles to rest, right? It was after the second tragedy, the Columbia, but that wasn't even why. They even had said it before that they were going to have to retire the fleet because just like airplanes, they have a certain shelf life. And they flew longer than they were supposed to, and they were supposed to retire them. The problem was no one had came up with a plan to think beyond them. So there was no future plan in place. And what NASA had did at that point, they were contracting with other space agencies to go to space. So the irony to me right there was that the entity that got us to space, got us to the moon, that was number one, was now paying other people to go to space. And that, to me, should have been the moment right there that we're in a national crisis as far as that, because guess what? That's like now we're paying somebody to race for us, right? Instead of us running across the track ourselves, I'm going to pay you to run for me.
Well, that's a very true point. However, it could be seen as some people, you know, the people who were in charge of the government and funding NASA might have passed on, and we have a younger regime that their focus wasn't on those type of goals anymore.
Right. No, exactly. And that's why I said, you know, a lot of times you have the founder of a company, they build this great business, and they leave it to their idiot children, and the business usually falters or squanders, and then it takes some new breed or some new exec, often outside of the initial founder's family, to have either a reimagining of the passion or just a new passion to do it further or differently. But that's what it takes. It's just the founder's energy is gone, and it takes another generation to come in to kind of capture that energy again.
Tired of the same rap songs, every new hit should sing along. Rap is so boring, now correct me if I'm wrong. It's like they took the art form. I'm tired of the same rap songs.
No, it's true.
Yes. Sorry when I said they're idiot children. That's just my knock on the fact that a lot of times when kids take over for things, they don't see the vision and the need to do it the way it was done before. But that being said, that opened the door to commercial travel, because NASA was at this point not going to space. NASA's still not going to space. Even as today, NASA has no inherent space program. Right? They still contract with other entities to send things to space. So that's where we come to the new space race, which it seems like it's just a space race of billionaires, but it's actually a little bit bigger than that. But what event happened recently that makes it that put the space race back in the spotlight?
Well, basically, I know the founder of Amazon, Jeff Bezos, was among some people that was able to take a flight into the atmosphere. I'm not sure how far up they went, but I do believe they went into the atmosphere. So that's now the first time that, I guess, regular citizens have been able to go that far.
Right. So a week before Jeff Bezos, Richard Branson of Virgin Galactic went to space. And I believe it was like 55 kilometers or something thereabouts. But went to space, went to a point of weightlessness, different technology than what Jeff Bezos used. But he was the first civilian astronauts. Then a week later, Jeff Bezos and his crew went to space in Blue Horizon, which is his own technology. And the third person who's part of that conversation is Elon Musk with his SpaceX, which is also a commercial space entity. So as you said, it went from being a nationalized program between the United States and the USSR to now, in many ways, it's a commercial program between Blue Horizon, Virgin Galactic, and SpaceX. In truth, though, there are many countries, or not many, there's several countries around the world with their own nationalized space programs. Russia goes to space routinely. Japan, I believe, has their own space program. I know China has their own space program. And there may be others. So in other words, we don't have the monopoly anymore. We were just the first to get to a certain point.
No, I totally understand that. I mean, to me, and this may be on the side note, I can see the purpose of going to space as far as putting up satellites and different things we need to use it for. But one could question, are we spending too much money on something, you know, that's something that we're not getting a benefit from?
Well, that's true, but you actually just said the reason why, right? Because nobody leaves their home without their cell phone. And part of using their cell phone is GPS. So, I mean, you almost undid your point before you fully made it, right? Cell phones is a major reason, right? Are a major beneficiary of satellite technology, which is a beneficiary of space travel. So if you didn't even mention that point, you could say, well, gee, what do we get out of it, right? But you said one of the primary things we get out of it. Satellite technology, GPS.
No, I totally understand that.
Right. Now, that's the surface one, right? That's what we know of. The truth of the matter is there's probably many technologies that we don't know that still are impacted by technology that's in orbit or outer space or whatever that we also can't live without, which gets to the real point of why today's conversation is. So for our listeners, sorry about the history lesson, but we felt it necessary to go through the space race to explain why we're talking about the space race. And the reason why we wanted to bring the space race to you guys today is that there's a lot of energy behind it. And they're saying that trillions of dollars may be generated by it. And like Big Rube said, it may be the next frontier, maybe the final frontier, who knows. And it's supposed to be this tremendous effort that's going to, in some ways, lift up the world economically, technologically, and maybe even politically. And my pause on it is that every time there's some new major technology boom, an economic boom, minorities and Black people in particular always get left behind. So as I was watching these two billionaires go to space, and I had no issues with them going to space, but like Big Whoop said, okay, good for them, but how does it benefit us? But that really made me wonder how or if it will benefit us. In other words, are we minorities, people that tend to be on the lower rung of society, going to benefit from the space race? Not is humanity going to benefit from the space race. Not are the wealthy going to benefit from the space race, but is everyone going to benefit from the space race? Or more importantly, the ones who always get left behind. Is this suddenly going to be the new technology that everybody's a part of? Or is it going to be like every other technology boom? The haves get it, the have-nots don't.
I would tend to believe that's the status quo is going to be the same. We're not going to take advantage of it or reap any benefits from it.
Okay. You said two very potent statements, which are actually very separate. One, we might not take advantage of it, which has been the case in other forms of technology. And two, we might not benefit from it, which has also been one of the, you know, outcomes of new technologies. So one, the first point, why might we not take advantage of it? I know I didn't say that right. That's not good English, so what? How come we won't take advantage of it? Like, why wouldn't we?
Well, I mean, I don't know what type of industries or opportunities are going to come across from people trying to go to space privately. I don't know. I'm not sure.
Okay. And that's the same thing that happened with the .com boom, right? People didn't know how to make websites or what the website was going to do or what was going to make money. Nobody knew Amazon was going to be this big website in 1995. But the point is people were creating websites, right, trying to figure out what the next big thing was, or more importantly, trying to make the next big thing so that when it happened, they would benefit from it. So to your point, is it we don't know? Is it we're waiting for somebody else to do it? Or is it we don't know how? Because at the end of the day, that's why we get left behind, right? If today's episode is a space race, and you cannot win a race if you're not running.
No, that's true. But when you say we're not running, we're trying. You're going to have a group of people who are going to try to make their own spaceship to go into space now with the other people?
Maybe, yes. Why is that so crazy?
Costs a lot of money.
Okay, but somebody made a car. Somebody made an airplane, right? So what I'm saying is money's a part of it, right? But as we established before, even with NASA, right, the drive is the first part. And when President Kennedy said there's a drive to do it, right, that created a spark. Yes, money followed. And yes, we know as minorities in this country, we tend to lack resources. But like you said, we're talking about the first of the two problems you identified. The second problem is we usually don't get the resources. We don't get support. The first is we don't take advantage of it.
No, I totally agree. Although we don't always take advantage of opportunities when they are given to us.
Right. So that's why I wanted to say those are two separate ones. Now, moving to the second point you made, let's say we are trying to take advantage of it, right? Because to address the question you just said, what industries are, whatever industries we want, whatever industries are needed, right? That's part of entrepreneurialism, to see where there's an opportunity or to make a new opportunity, right? There was no cable TV industry. But people figured, hey, if I wire this cable, I can send a signal there, and it is what it is. So part of being on the front end of something is thinking outside the box or trying to make something that doesn't exist.
What's going on, man? I don't understand it. I want something good to listen to. I demand it. All the real artists on another planet. And me, I'm the last MC still standing.
So let's say we were to come up with good plans and to do our homework and have ideas that made sense and could be validated. What would it maybe take for us to get the funding to go beyond that?
I guess venture capital, maybe, or if you had some type of government assistance, small business loan, depending on what you were trying to actually do. You know, what are you trying, if you're trying to put a satellite in space, if you're trying to set up your own commercial travel so people can go up sightseeing. I'm not sure what opportunities people would want to try to start.
Well, that's the point. That would be up to the people. That would be up to the entrepreneurs, right? I think it's almost like the story of Black Wall Street. Imagine if that individual, I forget his name, I think it was Gurley, I believe. I'm sorry, because I don't have it in front of me right now for our listeners, but I think his last name was Gurley. But imagine if he didn't say, hey, I'm going to set up a black town where we can have our own businesses and prosper on our own. And we know what that led to, right? But I'm saying it took someone like him to create something like that that did not exist or did not exist at that level, right? And then the backlash came. So we know about the backlash. We talked about that before. But today we're talking about the girlies of today, the technological girlies, the ones saying, hey, I want to be like Jeff Bezos, right? I want to be like Bill Gates. I want to create the next or the first space hotel. So yes, who knows what business is going to look like? We're simply saying we need to be in the race running to be a part of the race, as opposed to being in the stands or outside the stadium or not even paying attention.
No, you make a very good, valid point.
Okay. So what is it going to take? Like, what's it going to take for us to have the motivation to want to be involved and then to partner with the funding and resources to make it real?
I really not sure. I mean, I think you have to have people with the drive and the vision. If they see something they can create, that's going to be a legacy for generations to come. But specifically, I'm not sure what, you know, what direction they're going to want to go in.
Okay. Okay. Well, I definitely have one and insight in this, and I'll share it. And it's actually based on one of my former vocations. I was formerly a school guidance counselor, and I do understand the value of education. And this is one where education plays a part. Whether it's formal education, informal education, but just the learning structure. I mean, for the last 20 plus years, thereabout, STEM has been a major initiative, being STEM being science, technology, engineering, and math. And it's going to have to be this desire to engage in these fields that's going to make the difference, right? You're not going to get to space without science, technology, engineering, and math. And the space race, again, is being restarted, reignited, right? And I feel if we're going to participate, when I say we and I say minorities, I mean all of us, right? But I mean, there's always, the evidence shows that we're always lagging behind. We're lagging behind in the digital divide, right? We're lagging behind financially. So I see the opportunity that the space race represents, but I also see the reality that every time something big comes along, it passes by us. So I'm hoping that this episode can spark something that we don't get left behind this time, that we take this opportunity to grab on and to be a part of it and maybe even run ahead of it.
No, I totally hear what you're saying, and hopefully it will spark some interest in some of the people with those mindsets to take advantage of it. I think the part I'm having trouble with, and it's nothing to do with you in general, is I know there's going to be ancillary fields that's going to be benefiting from going to space, but this going to space to me doesn't seem to be where I'm still missing what the great thing would be about everybody trying to go to space. I know there'll be other interests that's going to come up about because of it, but the initial fascination with going to space, I'm lost.
Well, again, that's fair enough. That's a good point. And I think, again, it's almost like you make points and then you answer them with your own counterpoints, right? If we think about the internet was just supposed to be an alternative phone system in case nuclear bombs took down our phone system, right? So the government wasn't thinking about all these computers connected, the private sector, and people emailing and watching Netflix. They just want to make sure if nuclear bombs fell and our phones went down, we could still communicate. So if we think of it that way, the ancillary may be the whole point, right? Maybe going to space is just going to be, okay, you go up, and then it's the thing. It's maybe they're going to be able to perform surgeries in space that they can't perform on Earth. I've heard that, I don't know how accurate it is, but one of the things they want to do is they want to start mining and doing different industrial operations in space to preserve the Earth. If we release chemicals in space, we won't release on Earth, right? So maybe that'll initiate climate change in a reverse way or undo climate change, let's say, where the Earth becomes healthier for us to live on. Is that the case? I don't know. I mean, to be honest, I don't necessarily trust the scientists because I think they're just going to go to space and mess space up. But that's another point, right? But what I'm saying is you're right. We don't know what it's going to lead to, but I think it's the pursuit that makes us better.
No, again, it's another frontier of the conquer. So I totally understand what you're saying.
Exactly. And my point is, I guess, if it's another frontier to conquer, I just want to make sure that everyone's a part of it, whether we get there or not. If we don't get there, we don't get there together. If we get there, we get there together. But it's just unfair when some of us get there and some of us never get there.
No, well said.
Okay, so we can kind of go towards, I guess I'll call it actions, because again, today's episode Space Race, we did go down history just to kind of bring our listeners along. Because you're right, there's a lot of people that don't really care about space, but they can't live without their GPS. And you have to connect the dots. You have to understand that it was the Wright brothers and other people playing around with technology that led to flying, and it's flying that eventually led to going to space, and space that led to GPS telling you where you are when you're lost in your own city. So there is always a connective web that we have to pay attention to. And hopefully our listeners will kind of get that and realize that life doesn't happen. You have to make it happen. And that's, again, what this whole episode, and that's basically hopefully what our podcast does. You know, our listeners can take some of what they hear and apply it for themselves or apply it for their families. Because if this is going to be a big trillion-dollar enterprise or multi-trillion-dollar opportunity, how can we not be excited about trying to participate in that? That's my thinking, right? We went back to last year or 2 years ago with the episode Amazon Armageddon, where there was people arguing about 30,000 jobs coming to New York City. Why would we want jobs? What? So we're doing so good that we don't want jobs, or we'll never get those jobs. Okay, so if we don't get those jobs, where are they going to come from? And that's what I'm saying. Like, we actually should cut off our nose despite our face. Like, people arguing about Amazon coming here to bring jobs. Oh, they're just going to make money off of us. Okay, but you still need jobs. You still need to participate to get ahead. You got to be in the race if you want to run, if you want to win.
Well, that is so true. I think we're still waiting, still looking for those 30,000 jobs.
Exactly. Exactly. And the sad part is we called it. Once Amazon was gone, we knew that the jobs weren't going to come because we knew it was just a political herring. It was a red herring. It wasn't about really trying to mobilize the community in a meaningful way. It was just bad guy attacking. Okay, you attacked them, but the community's still struggling. That's not really
no, no. Yeah, you say it's true. It's like the flavor of the month. They were out, all these politicians and advocates were out bad-mouthing the whole idea, and as soon as it didn't go through, nothing has been done to replace them. Oh, they're going to do all these community activities to get jobs. Haven't seen it yet.
Exactly. We don't need Amazon. We're going to make these jobs ourselves. Like, we just make 30,000 jobs. It's just that easy. Why didn't we do that before? I mean, that's kind of the point of the episode. Maybe the space race is going to lead to nothing, or maybe this is going to be the next opportunity for the human race. And how do we, as minorities, make sure that we're part of the opportunity? How do we make sure that we're educated, informed, aware, prepared, and able to fully participate?
Tired of the same rap songs, every new hit should sing along. Yeah. Rap is so boring, now correct me if I'm wrong. Yeah. It's like they took the art form. I'm tired of the same rap songs.
And that's what I'm saying. That starts, I guess, with the drive. We have to want to be a part of it.
Well, I guess what you said before is going to be key. You have to have the youth engaging in STEM, going into those programs and really buckling down and learning their craft so they can take part in this frontier.
Well said. Well said. Well said, Big Root. So why don't we take that statement and go right to our call to action, because that's what it is. So what is your call to action based on what you just said?
Well, basically talking to the youth and keeping their minds open to exploring STEM opportunities, because so many times I think, you know, a lot of people have been told go to school and do liberal arts and do esoteric things that don't really have a foundation, whereas they can develop these skills that can help them not just in going to space, but in technological jobs, engineers, architects, those type of jobs that we tend to be very lowly, represented in.
Exactly. Very, very good call to action. I totally agree with that one. Having worked in education myself, I totally agree with that. And I think I'm going to piggyback on that for my call to action. And that's going to say we need to push ourselves and push the youth hard, right? don't just, like you said, take the easy class. Take the hard class and fight through the hard class. Yes, you might fail, but make that an important part of your life. In other words, you know what? Let's cut out the distractions. Let's watch less TV. Let's watch less time on the internet playing video games. If you want to play video games, make video games, right? If you want to be in TV, start to make TV shows. I don't just mean stupid YouTube videos, but learn the craft of television. What I'm saying is we have to learn to push ourselves to be part of the society and not to be distracted by the fragments of society, right? So, I mean, yeah, I think, like you said, we have to go to the youth and we have to get the youth to be more engaged and not just receptive. Kids don't even go outside to play anymore. Now they just want to play in their computers on video games. So not only are they, at least when they were young, they were in shape and healthy. Now they're not healthy and they're not really progressing or advancing themselves.
I think our generation has tried to make everything so sanitized and easy that we've outsmarted ourselves and made everything, we've corrupted a lot of things that used to be genuine. You know, we're scared that everyone who's outside is a molester. He's going to get my child and do something to him. The children are going to play and then they're going to find crack files on the ground. So I don't want them to go outside to the park and play. It's like everything we try to hide them from, we're just making them weaker and softer.
I agree with that. I agree. And I also think, and this goes a little off topic, but for our listeners, you'll be able to follow this. We have to be outside with them, right? And I think that was the problem. Because we always talk about when we were younger, played Little League, how it was the men of our communities that were part of that process, right? So they didn't just tell us to go outside and play. They went outside and they played with us. And they made sure we were safe. And that's a part of it. Not just to send the kids out or tell the kids STEM, but do STEM with them. Encourage them to be in STEM. Turn the TV off in our house. Let's not always watch the game and let's watch more Science Channel and watch more of the workings of the world and share that with the kids, right? Because the problem is we use TVs to raise our children and go on and watch TV and leave me alone. And that's what happened. They left us alone. They weren't pushed by us. They didn't push themselves. And so what I'm saying is to your call to action and to my call to action, we have to reach out to the youth. And we have to guide and support the youth as they become the changes we hope they can become.
No, I totally agree. And I mean, I don't want to get too far off topic. I know we're almost done as far as this episode. But I was watching the trailer for King Richard, which is the father of Venus and Serena, the tennis champions. And basically, he pushed his children. Now, we see the great products they become as far as the great tennis players and winning Grand Slams. But that took a lot of effort. I think the same way he pushed them in tennis, we can push our children harder in education and other activities to get them to be the best. But I think a lot of times we try to coddle them and let them, just do your best. We're not really going to challenge them to really, really become champions in whatever they're doing.
Exactly. No, that's a good point. That's a good point. And again, for our listeners, I know our call to action was longer than it normally is, but I think because this episode is really important, because this episode is about our future, right? I guess we can look at where we are and where we've been, but this episode is about really looking where we can go. So I think like Beirut said, like our call to action said from both of us, we have to be a part of this change. We do have to target the youth. A lot of us are not going to make it to space. I hate to say it. We might not, but our grandchildren, they're primed for it, and they should be primed for it. And I think this episode is hopefully a spark for our listeners to prime our grandchildren so that they're going to go to space, even though most of us aren't. And we have to make that an initiative. Or nobody goes to space. Like I said, maybe it is just Jeff Bezos, Richard Branson, Elon Musk. Maybe they're going to go to space and play chess. I don't know, but I'm joking. Really, if we want to see the space race be fully reflected, we have to inject ourselves into it. So that's what this episode is about.
Yep. So definitely encourage your children with STEM programs, some to focus on their studies. Like you said, turn the TV off, you know, try to create good habits in them, good work ethic.
Definitely. And again, I don't want to stretch any longer than we did today's episode of Space Race, but I will say this much also as a call to action. make sure you watch Hidden Figures. When you see the movie, you'll know why. I'm not going to say why. Whoever's seen it already gets it, but watch. Because the point is, part of them going to space was with our help. And that's the point. So we've been a part of the space race. We just haven't been recognized. We need to get recognized for our efforts, and we need to make sure we work harder.
Oh, well said, well said. The same way that one of the originators of the internet was a person of African-American descent.
Exactly. So our listeners had a lot to take in, and hopefully they'll process it. But today's episode is the space race. I'm Sean P.
I'm Big Root.
And we are the brothers.
Peace out.
I'm tired of the same rap songs. Every new hit, sing along. Rap is so boring, now correct me if I'm wrong. It's like they took the art out the art form. What's going on, man? I don't understand it. I want something good to listen to. I demand it. All the real artists on another planet. And me, I'm the last MC still standing.